Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
This episode of the Short Term Show has been brought to you by your friendly short-term shop real estate agent. We are hyper-local and totally dedicated to your success. Whether you want to buy your next short-term rental or sell the one you currently own, we would be honored to earn your business. We are in all of the best vacation markets in America. Find us at theshorttermshop.com. That's theshorttermshop.com. Brokered by EXP.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Short Term Show. We have a really cool guest today. She's actually been on Shark Tank, which is really cool. And now she is the CEO and founder of Atlas Vacations and the host of a cool podcast called Seed Money. We have Jayla Siciliano. Jayla Siciliano.
All good. It's a mouthful. Hey, so good to be here. This is so fun. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. Your story is really cool. So I'm really excited to share it with everybody. So first, I think the elephant in the room is we all want to hear about Shark Tank. So can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I know. It's been years now since I was on. I was on season 5. So it's been a long time, but people still ask about it all the time. Crazy experience. You know, I had no intentions of going on the show, and one thing, you know, led to another, and I ended up applying reluctantly, not really wanting to go on the show. Got on, and you know, the show is totally legit. I have nothing but great things to say about it. They know nothing about you before you go out there, and you know, so it was an intense but great experience. Required a ton of prep to feel dialed out there. Ended up getting a deal with Mark Cuban. He's amazing. They're way more involved than I ever, you know, expected, and would not want to do it again for sure. I don't think ever. Just because it was so intense, you know. Remember the producers were like, "If you go out there and pee your pants, we don't stop filming." So you know, I was out there for about an hour. Yeah, they edit it down to like 15 minutes and they're just firing questions at you, you know, left and right, trying to throw you off. But it was fun. Amazing. You can't beat the marketing exposure and, you know, the relationships and contacts you get out of it. So it was really, really fun. Highly recommend it. If anybody has a company, like, go for it. Yeah, you just can't beat the exposure. So yeah, it was fun, but intense.
Yeah, it sounds really fun, but then it also sounds like it kind of gives me a panic attack to think about having to do.
Exactly. Yeah.
And tell our audience what your company was.
Yeah. So I had, I was in the corporate world for 7 years. I worked for Diesel Footwear and Burton Snowboards, both like heavy drinking environment kind of companies. Mm-hmm. And I was always active and healthy. And all I really saw were like, you know, wine coolers or beer or regular wine or cocktails. And there wasn't really a lighter, healthier option that wasn't full of sugar and preservatives. And so I started making my own wine spritzers. And then, you know, I'd be out wakeboarding and guys were asking me for them. And I'm like, you know, guys don't want to drink beer all day on the boat either and get full and bloated. So I saw this kind of gap in the market for a lighter, healthier wine option. And, you know, it was one of those things. I knew nothing about the alcohol industry, went into it so naive. And I was just kind of like, I can do this. I'm going to start this, you know, develop this product. I'd been in product development for 7 years. So I was very familiar with, you know, developing product, consumer products and stuff like that. And so I decided to go for it. And it was about a 9-year run, almost 10 years, and crazy experience, but brutal industry to get into. Alcohol is tough. Lots of regulations, pay to play, tough industry. That's for sure.
Wow. And you did get a deal on Shark Tank, because so many people, you know, they walk away without one.
Yeah. I mean, Shark Tank was a little bit of a Hail Mary for me. So we had, I raised $450,000 before I even had any revenue for the wine. That took me 18 months of pitching angel investors. It was non-friends and family, you know, really had to give it my all to raise that initial funding, and ended up losing all of our production on the first production run. Devastating. You know, really was like, okay, what are we going to do? And so going on Shark Tank was a little bit of a, okay, just gotta do whatever I can, you know, to keep going here. And so we ended up giving away, you know, a huge chunk of the company to Mark Cuban, but it was totally worth it because they do, you know, he did way more than just put the money in, obviously. So it ended up being a really good partnership, but ultimately very difficult to reach profitability. And I ended up closing the company down when my son was born, and that'll probably pivot into where I'm at now with real estate. But yeah, crazy experience. But the deal, getting the deal was awesome. Mark Cuban's a great guy for sure. In it for the right reasons.
Awesome. Well, that is really cool. And I think, yeah, the next question is, how do you go from being that type of entrepreneur to even deciding, you know what, I think I want to be a real estate investor?
Yeah, it kind of happened a little bit by accident. If I go way back, my parents always were doing kind of renovations. You know, they bought rental properties growing up, so I was around that a bit. When I was in my early 20s, I did buy a triplex. And so I had that mentality. I lived in each one, you know, fixed it up, rented it. So I definitely had an idea of the benefits of real estate, but I never really considered that as an actual path of, you know, creating the lifestyle that I wanted. And I saw this, you know, opportunity to create this product, and I had this dream of growing this huge brand and company and, you know, selling it someday for a gazillion dollars. And then as I got into it, you know, 7-8 years in, I was just killing myself. I was working 16 hours a day. I was traveling like crazy. I had high blood pressure. And all of a sudden that like dream that I thought was the dream was not the dream anymore. I was like, wow, this is my life. I've missed my friends' weddings. I've missed, you know, baby showers. Like, I don't do anything fun. My husband, poor guy, is just always, you know, I'm always, always working. And he's been my biggest cheerleader. He was very patient, but that can wear on relationships over time. And I felt like I was pushing my luck. And we wanted to start a family. So I, you know, we were like, okay, let's make a huge pivot here. It was a really tough decision. And I thought we were going to have more kids. So I was like, I just need a job. So I went back to a corporate job. I was VP of sales and marketing for a music company, actually. And it was a great company. But then I quickly realized like, oh, what am I doing? I don't want to work for someone else forever. Whoops, this is a little too far. I overcorrected here. So it was 2020, beginning of COVID, we rented an Airbnb, and I was looking at the numbers of what we paid for it. And it had a pool. And I was like, this is the most relaxing vacation ever. Kids are playing in the pool. And I was like, you know what? Maybe we should buy an Airbnb. And, you know, so we ended up buying one, and it's still in our most lucrative property. It's about an hour from here in Santa Barbara. Amazing spot. And then, you know, slowly I was like, actually, I think I could do this for other people, manage other properties. So we ended up buying a property back east in Vermont, where I grew up. And little by little started managing other properties there and other properties here in Santa Barbara. And it was a grind at first. And I was, you know, worried I was back into that, oh my gosh, am I killing myself again? But fortunately caught myself before going down that path and got it to a place where, you know, I really am only spending, you know, minimal time on that every week. And it's kind of freed me up to do other things I'm passionate about. So now I really feel like that dream is, you know, the lifestyle that I really wanted of having flexibility and being able to do things I'm passionate about. I finally got here. And it was through real estate, which is funny. So
I hear so many people, myself included, say, this happened by accident. You know, I didn't set out to be a real estate investor. I didn't say when I was a kid, oh, I want to grow up and be a real estate investor. And also, same thing. So many people who were doing what they thought was their dream job or their dream path, and then they realized, oh, I was wrong about this. And then they end up pivoting into real estate because it does give you that ability to design your lifestyle the way you want it to be. And that's one of my favorite things about about being a real estate investor.
Yeah, totally agree. There's so much flexibility with it.
Yeah. So let's start with your Santa Barbara property. So what made you choose that market? Because I know there's a lot of, don't invest in California rhetoric out there. So what made you choose to go California first?
Well, I think it's right in our backyard. That felt safe at the time of, you know, it's an hour away. We could run there if we had to. It was COVID, so we were itching to get out of our house, you know, and we were like, okay, we could go there on the weekends, you know, and then rent it when we're not there. And then I think the other thing too is because it was COVID and, you know, after we went all in on the wine company. And so we're a little more cautious, you could say, risk-wise at this point, right? And so when I was looking at the numbers, I'm like, okay, worst case scenario, you know, we could always move into this. We could rent it as a long-term rental. Like the numbers worked kind of multiple ways. So I don't know, we just kind of, that felt comfortable at the time. I didn't really have much knowledge about Airbnbs. So having something close by just felt comfortable. I think that's probably the main reason why. But then after that, I quickly realized like, you know, regulations are different here. Prices are high. Kept running the numbers in different areas, and Vermont just made a lot more sense for our next property after that.
Okay. And where in Vermont is that property?
So we actually bought in a little town 20 minutes outside of Stowe, Vermont. And it's funny because my brother lived there and he's like, why the heck are you buying there? So locally, the town doesn't have the best reputation, but you get so much more for your money. We bought 18 acres. It's 7 lots subdivided, gorgeous, like views. It has 2 ponds. It's so people going there for vacation, you know, they don't really know the local vibe of the town. And there's cute stuff. There's really great restaurants and stuff, but it's not this like Stowe vibe, which Stowe is the cream of the crop, you know, ski town in Vermont. So I think it was a good lesson that you don't have to buy in the, you know, cream of the crop spot. You can definitely look for surrounding areas that still have all the amenities and maybe you get a little more for your money, because that place actually performs just as well, if not better, than the properties I manage in Stowe. And we probably would have paid close to double what we paid in Stowe. Yeah. So it was a big difference, but it ended up working out really well.
Okay. So what's your guest avatar at this Vermont place when they come on vacation? Like, what are they coming to do? Just chill or like ski?
Families for sure. Okay. A combination of chilling at the property. You know, we put a hot tub in, it has a bar, a sauna. We do snowshoes and cross-country skis and fishing poles. So it's big enough where a few families can go and just hang on the property and not leave and have enough entertainment. But then they're minutes away from bike trails. You know, 3 ski resorts are within about 20 to 40 minutes.
Okay.
Swimming, you know, all kinds of stuff in the area. So.
Okay.
Pretty central. Yeah.
All right. And then reverting back to your Santa Barbara property. So what's your guest avatar there and what are people coming to do?
So that one, the other reason we did buy that one specifically, that one's also families. It has a pool, which is pretty unique. I think there's only one other property in that town specifically that has a pool. And we put a hot tub in, you know, we did it up again, horseshoes, bocce ball, like all the stuff so that you can just hang there. But then you can walk your 10-minute walk to a bunch of tasting rooms and great restaurants and stuff like that. So that's families, you know, going to wine country, but they want to bring the kids and have entertainment at the property for the kids.
Okay. And so correct me if I'm understanding this wrong, just trying to understand the difference between these two markets. So would you say that the Santa Barbara market is more of a luxury type clientele market than the market that you're in outside of Stowe in Vermont?
I don't know. You know, I mean, yeah, maybe a little bit, but I think it really is the same. You know,
okay.
Neither of these properties are, we made them nice, but not so nice that, because I know if we go with a bunch of kids to a property for vacation, we don't want to worry that they're going to mess it up. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
yeah.
Yes, it's kind of, they're like that in between where they're stylish and cool and nice, but so, you know, we didn't go overboard to where families, you know, they're priced super high. So I would say they're a nice, like they're both kind of in that very family friendly, you know, borderline luxury, but certainly not. There's much more luxurious properties in both areas, you know, than ours, I would say.
Okay. And this is new to me because I'm completely unfamiliar with both of these markets, which is good because I'm sure people are really tired of hearing me talk about the few that I am super familiar with. So I think that I really like that you said that they're not like ultra luxury, because none of my properties are ultra luxury either. I have 8. They're all cute, clean, and comfortable. I call it the 3 C's of short-term rentals. But I think that in a lot of markets, if you're not in like an ultra high-end market, that everybody that goes there is really, really wealthy, there is kind of a ceiling on how luxury you really need to go. So in some of the markets that I'm in, now I'm going to do it. Now I'm going to mention the markets that everyone's started hearing about, like the Smokies, for example. Yes, it's a huge market. Yes, there's tons of tourism there. But so many people try to go so over the top lately with how luxury it is that I think they're going kind of over the heads of the actual tourism, because the tourism there, you know, these aren't people that are going to Aspen. That's a much more expensive vacation. They're coming to the Smokies because it's affordable. And it is cool to have these like crazy cool properties. But I think there is a point where it's like a diminishing return, that you've gone so luxury now that it's too expensive for the actual tourists that go there to really want to do. So I like to hear that too, that you found the same thing in several cross-country markets.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you there. I think the other thing too, because we manage a few properties in Stowe and in Santa Barbara that really do hit that luxury mark. And during slow season, and, you know, just with more and more saturation, it's harder to, like with our own properties, I feel like I can come down on the price just to book them out. And people aren't raising an eyebrow of like, why is that low? You know, you have a lot more flexibility in the pricing to really fill up your calendar. Whereas with some of these higher end ones, I feel like it raises an eyebrow if the pricing, you know, drops too much, or, you know, owners are kind of going, well, I don't want to price it that low. Is it, you know, worth it? So ultimately, I think we end up netting a lot more by being in this, you know, that kind of sweet spot that we're in versus just comparing to the properties that I manage, I know that we do net more than those higher end luxury properties because it is a little bit more limited and we keep the prices higher there. So,
yeah, it's interesting. I totally agree with that.
If you like what you're hearing, if you're picking up what I'm putting down, you can join me on a live weekly call to talk about your next short-term rental or ask questions about the one you already have. I am live once per week on Zoom. I would love to have you come and say hello. It's strquestions.com. That's strquestions.com. Come and join us. This episode is brought to you by Short-Term Rental Listing Advice. Join this Facebook group and post your listing to get advice from other hosts, including myself, on how you can improve your listing. Or just post your property so you can show off. Join us at strlistingadvice.com. That's strlistingadvice.com.
You know, when you get into a situation where you've bought a property that is such a stretch for you financially, that when you're looking at your pricing and you don't want to go below a certain amount that's actually still pretty high, then, you know, maybe you've stretched it a little too much. I mean, we see people sometimes that'll send us their property and say, hey, what's wrong with my property? It's not renting. And it's totally nice, like beautiful photos, beautiful place, but they've got it priced, you know, double what it should probably be. And when you actually add up, well, if you were to book this thing for, you know, 80% of the month, that would be like a $30,000 month on, for example, a 3-bedroom property. And that's a lot of money. And when you kind of reframe it like that, when they're saying, well, I don't want to go less than X. But even if you do, you still could potentially be making a lot more money than if you just left it at the super high price and didn't get booked.
Yep. Yeah, I think something we see too is people buying those really higher end, nicer luxury properties, but then not investing in the amenities. And it's a lot tougher to book those properties because people just want the amenities, you know, they want stuff to do. So I think that helps balance out the need for that, you know, really just super high end furnishings and all that stuff.
So both of your markets are like, they're as far from each other as they could possibly be. And really kind of as different types of markets as they could possibly be. So for somebody listening who's like, oh, well, how do I figure out what those amenities are? How did you decide, okay, well, for this California property, I need this set of amenities. And for this Vermont property, I need this other set? Because I think sometimes people can get confused about like putting amenities in certain markets where it may not work. So how do you decide which ones are right for which market?
I think just doing competitive research is one, right? Knowing what else is out there, which places seem to be booked a lot. You know, in Vermont, the thing I've learned now is that views are really important. People really want that surrounded by nature kind of feel. Or they want to be like right on, you know, right on the mountain, the ski resort kind of thing. But I would say just competitive research. And then also, I think we're our own avatar, you know what I mean? Where we are, what do we want when we go somewhere? Hot tubs, we have hot tubs, you know, at both places. And it's hard to say how much of an ROI really the hot tub is. Like we have owners asking, should we put a hot tub there? And I don't know, it's really tough in both areas to know if you do get a return because, you know, having them clean twice a week, it's not cheap. It's an ongoing expense. But I know for us, we like to have the hot tubs when we go there to visit. So that was kind of one of the main reasons we put the hot tub in. But all the other stuff for me, it was just put as many small amenities as we can. Like snowshoes and cross-country skis, stuff that people might want to try. They might not have their own gear, but it makes it feel like a special occasion if they can go and have an experience snowshoeing, you know? So anything that kind of gives it a little bit of a, we can make our time there a little more special or unique or try something new. I think all those things, you know, help. So that's kind of how I look at it.
Okay. I agree with that. The old enemy method. And for people listening who are like, my gosh, she's got her first property is in California. Her second property is in Vermont. Those are so far away. What advice do you have for somebody who might be trying to decide, oh, there maybe something in their backyard is not really available. Maybe they live in a place where there's not something drivable that would really make sense to have a vacation rental in. So what would be your advice for somebody who might need to invest all the way across the country like that?
Well, I think it's totally doable for sure. Obviously, we're doing that. And, you know, it obviously the team is super important. Finding really good people, treating them well, paying them well. I would say we pay people really well in the Stowe area. It's tough there. You know, weather's bad. There's so many different variables. You have mud season, snow season, all this stuff. And so there's a lot of guest issues in that area. It's way more high maintenance than the Santa Barbara area in terms of maintenance and issues and things going wrong. So the team there is even more critical of having, you know, enough people kind of who are on call and available all the time. So it definitely costs more there, but it's worth it, right? Because it's still profitable. But I think just really, you know, making sure if that is where the numbers make the most sense, then not being afraid to do that and then just go step by step to set up the processes and systems that you need. We use Breezeway. I love Breezeway for managing all of our cleanings and maintenance. It makes everything so much easier. I think it would be challenging for us to do this without that. But, and then, yeah, so I think just the team is the most important thing. And for me, the way I found the team there was really just picking up the phone, calling, you know, one guy that I called in the very, very beginning, a contractor. He's our main maintenance guy. He's great. And, you know, we've been working together for a few years now. So it's just picking up the phone and calling people until you find, you know, people who want to work with you and kind of are on board with what you're doing and all that good stuff. So
there's one other thing that I want to call out about your choice of markets too, because I think it's really helpful for people because they'll, you know, decide for one reason or another, oh, I think I want to invest in vacation rentals. And then they're like, but where? And then they get so bogged down in the where and the data and all of these little spreadsheet cells and all these things. And they can never figure out where because they're just so locked into understanding all, I call it spreadsheet cell people, but like all of the spreadsheet cells about every single little thing about a market. And what you've done, even though these two markets are could not be further apart, you bought in markets that you know, that you understand. So this area that you bought in Vermont, it's not necessarily the Stowe, like the huge tourist destination, but because you're super familiar with it, you were able to be successful with it. And I think that that's where people might get a little off track. So for example, I would not suggest that anyone invest in Starkville, Mississippi, where I grew up. Could I be successful doing it? Probably, because I know everything there is to know about Starkville, Mississippi, and who comes there and why and what times of year. And I know everybody in town. Everybody knows my parents. I go to the Walmart in that town. Aren't you Dr. Allen's daughter? Yes. So I think that's really important that sometimes the knowledge of a market, like Starkville's not going to look great on paper to anybody, but I know I could do well with it because of my local knowledge. Same thing with you, with this Vermont market and this other market about an hour from you in California, is that you chose to start in places that you know. Do you have anything you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, definitely. I think I would, even right now, I would be open to going into other markets, but I would be a little bit more hesitant, not knowing, like, let's just say Texas. I just don't know Texas at all, you know? And not to say I couldn't figure it out, but I would be just a little more hesitant to do that. So yeah, I grew up in New England. I know what the snow is like. I had connections there. So yeah, I would agree with that. You know, if somebody has a market that they are familiar with, that can go a long way than just what the numbers are on paper, for sure. Yeah, agree.
Yeah, totally agree with that. Well, before we move to the last few questions of the show, I want to touch on your management company. So a lot of people, I think, once they own one or two, they're like, oh, you know, I can manage some more for other people, you know, whether it's they just really like it and want to be a property manager, or whether maybe they're out of DTI and they need to find a way to create some more income so they can go buy some more properties, you know, whatever the reason is. We do have a good segment of our listeners who are interested in managing for other people. So I'd love to hear how you went from, you know, owning your two to finding those management clients.
Yeah. So again, once I decided, I think I could do this for other people, the first couple that I got on were friends of friends, basically. My husband's in sales, so he is definitely, you know, way better at chatting things up than I am. So I think one of the first ones was a property here in California. It was a friend of his, and we still manage that property today. And then in Vermont, I had a friend that I had worked with at Burton, and he sold his property in Woodstock, Vermont, and recommended, you know, us to manage it there to those new owners. We since got rid of that one. I decided we were kind of broadening out into other areas, and I realized this will be much easier if we can stay just, you know, in two specific areas. There's plenty of vacation rentals in these two areas. There's no need for me to try to set up, you know, seven teams in different locations. And then from there, I had hired somebody to do more or less sales and bringing on new properties. The management part, and as you keep adding properties, things just get more and more complicated. And it's more and more important to rely on technology and systems. And so looking back, you know, the team I had in the very beginning was not as systems and tech focused. And that started to bite us as we were growing. Things were just being done off the cuff a million different ways. So the team I have in place now is very tech savvy, you know, very accustomed, worked with management companies before, very accustomed to following processes. So it's, things are much, much smoother now. It was a little, you know, we started growing really quickly. I was up to about 30 properties, had some really high maintenance owners that I was just like, you know what, this is not worth it. Brought it down to about 22 properties, and we're at a good spot right now. So at this point, very selectively bringing on new properties. The goal isn't to just, you know, grow like crazy. It's just more about, you know, maintaining a really quality management offering and service. I think it is easy to lose the quality, you know, as you grow. If you grow too quickly, we experience that. So maintaining quality is most important, and just being selective with any properties that we bring on, and kind of growing slowly and carefully, you could say.
Yeah. Fewer high quality properties over a lot of varying quality properties.
Yeah. The second you start getting things that are outside of your systems, or owners want to do things a certain way that's different than your systems, it just adds noise and complexity. And it's a much easier business if things can be done, you know, fairly, you know, mostly the same across the board and following the processes and systems. At least that's what I've experienced.
I totally agree with that. Well, as we wind down the show, we have the final three questions that we ask all of our guests. And the first one is, what advice would you give 20-year-old Jayla?
Well, let's see. 20-year-old Jayla was out having a blast. and I would say, keep doing that. That was fun for, you know, a while. I would say, though, you know, I have no regrets. I love the way my life path has gone. I've definitely hit some major challenges that I wouldn't wish upon anybody, but they've all made me who I am today. So no regrets. But one piece of advice I would say is work smarter, not harder. I do believe hard work is important. I don't think I would have done all the things I've done without hard work, but there was several points along my career where I wish I recognized sooner to pivot to working smarter than to just keep grinding and grinding. So that would be the advice I would give myself way back.
Really great advice. And along the same lines, what advice would you give a new short-term and vacation rental investor who's interested in getting started today? So mid-2024.
I would say join a mastermind. I was part of multiple masterminds. I actually should have mentioned that before when you said, how did I, you know, grow the management business? That would have been a much slower, more painful process if I wasn't, you know, a part of multiple mastermind groups. So I think, you know, it's not something you go to school for. There's all these little things you don't know about. It's nice to have that community and just learn, you know, avoid some of the mistakes that are pretty common. So that, hands down, don't try to do it without joining some sort of mastermind. Whoever you you know, whoever you relate to the most. I think there's a lot of good ones out there. I think I've heard amazing things about yours, Avery, and you know, there's a lot of them. But I think joining, and I think being a part of multiple is actually good, because you do get multiple perspectives. So I'm a big fan of masterminds. That's for sure.
All right, cool. And last question: what's your favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
Going back to the first question, I would say most recently, Dan Martell's Buy Back Your Time has been pretty impactful for me lately. I've totally shifted my mindset around, you know, just eliminating all the small tasks that I do that I hate, and allowing me to focus on the things that I'm excited about and passionate about. And that has just been such a huge positive shift in my life. So highly recommend that book. I've been like studying that one for the last couple of years.
Awesome. Great recommendation. And last, if our listeners want to follow you, listen to your podcast, any of the above, how do they do that?
Yeah. So part of what I'm doing with my free time is I love the entrepreneurship journey. I love startups. So I actually started a podcast called Seed Money. You can search Seed Money and podcast apps are on YouTube, and my name, and that will come up, Jayla Siciliano, or seedmoneypodcast.com. And it's super fun. A lot of startup stories, trying to inspire people that, you know, if they have a product, if they have something they want to launch and grow, how to raise money, how to bring on investors, all the different ways to fund a business. And I do think, you know, we're getting ready to develop this property in Vermont and contemplating raising money for it. Not sure if we're going to or not. But a lot of the principles that I talk about around startups and consumer-based products are relevant to, I think, real estate in some ways, where if somebody maybe wants to get into real estate, but they don't have the money, you know, some of the, you know, presentation formats and just really kind of thinking through how to present to a partner, hey, will you invest in this property with me to get started, right? That's like another form of seed money. And I think that's a great way to get started in real estate. So the podcast is definitely more about startups and entrepreneurship, but there's some things in there, I think, that, you know, cross industries for sure.
All right. Well, Jayla, thank you so much for coming on. This is a really great episode, and I can't wait for our listeners to hear it. Thanks again.
Yay. Thank you so much. So good to be here.